Today, we're going to try and give you a complete history of Britain in 20 minutes without all the boring bits.
Hello and welcome to Aprender Inglés with
Reza and Craig.
Hello, I'm Craig.
I'm Reza.
And with over 45 years of teaching experience between us, we're going to help you improve your grammar, perfect your pronunciation, and vocalize that vocabulary.
Craig, we've got plenty of feedback these days. I think we heard from Gustavo Gonzalo, also known as Don Quixote from La Mancha.
That's right. He sent a lovely email from deep Spain, as he says. And I just wanted to say hi, Gustavo. Thanks for listening. And it was really nice to get your email. Just one thing before we continue. We're recording podcasts 3 or 4 weeks in advance. So you're hearing something that we recorded maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. And that's the reason why when we answer your feedback, it's not immediate. Okay. Have a bit of patience. Please bear with us. We do promise to release one podcast every week, but you may not hear your email or voice message until 3 or 4 weeks after you send it. What's next, Reza?
Well, we also had feedback from Raisha Perez. She sent us an email. Raisha is from Valladolid, and she's going to Ireland this summer with her family.
That's nice.
And she says, or she writes in her email, "Hello, Reza and Craig. I found your great, funny, and incredibly useful podcast some months ago, and I listen to you almost every working day on my way to work."
Well, thank you very much.
That's great. "I passed the first certificate exam many years ago, around 20 or maybe more. Mm-hmm. Your podcast is helping me a lot to refresh grammar, vocabulary, listening, etc. I listen to Luke's podcast in order to hear different accents." Hi to Luke. We've mentioned Luke before. His podcast is great.
Hey, Luke, if you're listening, how you doing?
And she goes on, "But your podcast is the most pedagogic." Oh, well, thank you very much.
Sorry, Luke, if you're listening.
Yeah. Keep trying, Luke.
Come on, Luke.
Must do better.
You got to up your game, I'm afraid. You got to improve your podcast, mate.
And by the way, I'd like to also make a give special mention to Estefania from Quart, from the Escuela Oficial, who listens to Luke and our podcast. And the other day, she pointed out by chance that Luke had mentioned our podcast whenever a couple of days earlier, Craig and I had given a talk and mentioned Luke's podcast. So we love each other, really, you see. You scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. We mention Luke, he mentions us, even without knowing it.
Yeah, so we'll have to get Luke to come on this podcast and speak about his podcast. We'll try and do that very, very soon. But if you do enjoy listening to us, I'm sure you'll enjoy Luke's. So go over to Luke's English podcast. Just search on iTunes and you'll find him.
So Raisha Perez likes both, and she goes on, "Next summer, we will go to Ireland." Raisha, it's better to say we are going to Ireland because it's a plan. So it's better to use present continuous. Or you could also say we're going to go, but will is not typical for plans. Okay, we're going to Ireland, to Cork, that's in the south of Ireland, for 2 weeks to learn English in a family. The children play in English and we attend English lessons in the mornings. Reza, she writes, "Reza, I'm afraid we couldn't visit your great country, the north of Ireland. We won't be able to. But could you give us some advice about Cork? What to visit, what dishes to eat, etc."
Have you been to Cork?
I have, a long, long time ago. I was there for only a day, but I really enjoyed it. It was like about 25 years ago. It was really, really nice. A very colourful city. One thing you'll notice, Raisha, is in the centre of Cork, there's a lot of brightly painted buildings. It's strange. It's the only place in Ireland which has this. For some reason, it's a tradition for the facades of some of the buildings in the centre near the sea to be painted bright colours. It's really nice. Another thing is, What are you going to eat and drink there? Well, everybody pretty much in the world has heard of Guinness.
Right? Yeah, Guinness is wonderful in Ireland.
Yes, but don't ask for it in Cork.
Why?
It's the one exception. In Cork, they have their own drink called Murphy's, which is brewed in Cork, and they much prefer that to Guinness.
But it's
a source of pride for them.
It's a different kind of beer, isn't it?
No, it's very similar. It's what we call a stout, S-T-O-U-T. That means, you know, that black heavy beer with the white head on it, Guinness. But Guinness isn't the only one. Guinness is the most famous, but there are others. And in Cork, they're very proud of their local one called Murphy's. And it's more widely drunk than Guinness. So that's a strange thing about Cork. In Belfast, you won't even find Murphy's. It's very, very hard to find.
So something special to Cork. Yep. So if Raisha goes to Cork, she shouldn't ask for a pint of Guinness. She should ask for a pint of Murphy's.
Yep. Weird, isn't it?
Or half a pint of Murphy's.
Or half a pint.
Which is a small glass.
Yep. But actually, don't ask for a Guinness in Cork. Strangely, it's the one place in Ireland where you won't be popular if you ask for Guinness. Better to ask for Murphy's.
What about food? Can you think of any food that Raisha could ask for?
I don't know about Cork specialities, but just generally in Ireland, particularly on the coast, and Cork is on the coast, seafood such as mackerel, that's caballa in Spanish, that's very typical, and mussels,
mejillones,
very typical as well, and oysters, ostras. And food-wise, plenty of butter, milk. Buttermilk is very common in Ireland. What you might call leche agria. It's a very peculiar thing. It's not milk which is bad. It's milk which is supposed to be a little bit sour. Mm-hmm. S-O-U-R. That's agrio. And you find lots of bread in Ireland contains this buttermilk. They put it in and it gives a special taste. And I'm sure in Cork they have their own bread recipes.
And probably a good fried breakfast. You'd get a good fried breakfast in Cork, like sausages, tomato, eggs, bacon, all that good stuff that will fill you up for the day. So try a good and pub food. Food in pubs is very good usually.
I've just remembered, you reminded me, Craig, there is a thing called white pudding. Mm-hmm. Which is very typical in the south of Ireland. A very famous place for white pudding is Clonakilty. And Clonakilty might be in Cork, or it's near Cork, so I'm sure they eat it there. So when you have your fried breakfast, rather than black pudding, which is, you know, morcilla.
Morcilla, yeah.
Which is typical, as you know, from Castilla y León, where you come from. But white pudding, it's kind of similar, but I guess without so much blood in it, is very typical of that part of Ireland.
From an white anemic pudding. Pig, perhaps.
Yeah, an Irish pig maybe, which doesn't get so much sun. It's a bit wider, so you can try that.
So have a wonderful, wonderful time in Cork and in Ireland, Rachel. Thank you for your email. And she used a very nice expression when she finished her email. She said, I'm a little rusty with my English. And she made a joke of oxidized, because rust in Spanish is oxidado. So she's rusty. Her English is a little rusty, perhaps because she hasn't used English for a long time. So big hugs to you in Valladolid, and thanks again for your email.
We got another email, Craig, from Rafael Alba García. Could you read it out, please?
Yes, I'll try my best Spanish accent. Hola, Craig, estoy oyendo vuestro podcast y alguien, no recuerdo el nombre, ha dado un significado de carajo. Este carajo vuelve mucho, ¿eh? It comes back podcast after podcast. Y como yo ya opine al respecto y como no coincide con lo que yo os dije, te pongo lo que dice el diccionario de la Real Academia de la Lengua. Solo pongo la primera acepción, que coincide con lo que yo os dije. Malsón, miembro viril, es malsonante. Ya lo dejo, que no me gusta ponerme muy pesado. Saludos, Rafael. So, I checked, and it appears that that is true. That is a meaning. Any comments?
What does he mean, Rafael? What do you mean exactly by miembro viril? I'm not sure.
The male member.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh,
male sexual organ, the meaning of carajo. But when use it in slang, it kind of can mean a lot of different swear words, can't it? And then we had the meaning of the basket in a previous podcast, the basket at the top of a ship.
So it can mean the male member. Wow.
Yep. I didn't know that. Thanks very much, Rafael, for your clarification. And I wonder if we're going to get any more emails about carajo. Next, we have our final piece of feedback this week, a voice message from Francisco Espinola from Úbeda.
Hi, friends. I'm Francisco from Úbeda. I have a little suggestion for you. Have you ever thought about making an episode related to history? I mean British history, of course. For example, talking about the Roman period, the Celts, the Middle Ages, that kind of stuff. I think it could be very useful to learn more about British culture, to revise past tenses. I don't know. I love history and I think it could be nice. So that's all. See you in the next episode. A big hug. Bye.
Thank you very much, Francisco. It's always nice to hear from you. And thank you for your idea for this this week's podcast, A History of Britain. But we're going to try and do it in only 20 minutes. Reza, do you have any comments about Francisco's message?
Yes. The first thing I'd like to say is that your pronunciation is extremely good, Francisco.
Yeah, I agree.
Really good. You also have a good use of intonation. That's varying the tone of your voice, going up and down and making different melody to get your meaning across. You do that very well. The only thing I would point out is a typical Spanish mistake. In fact, Spanish speaker's mistake. The word Celts, C-E-L-T-S. It looks like that C should be pronounced S, doesn't it? It really looks like it, but it isn't. It's pronounced K. It's Celts.
Although you do have the football team Celtic.
Right. That's the only exception. When it's to do with sport, for some reason, we say Celtic.
Yeah.
So Glasgow Celtic. And also the Boston Celtics,
In America.
The basketball team. Yeah. And there are a few other Celtics in America. So when it's sport, they say Celtic. I don't know why. But when it's not sport, you say Celt or Celtic.
Right. Celtic as the adjective.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Celtic period. So here we go. Let's try and do this in 20 minutes. Speaking of Celts, what happened in 700 BC? Well, the Celts settled in Britain. So that's our first fact. The Celts came to Britain in around 700 BC. Then what happened, Reza?
So the Celts are ancestors to many people around Europe, in fact. But since we're talking about Britain, we're talking about Scotland, Wales and Ireland, but also England. People think of Scotland, Wales, Ireland more of the Celtic nations. But actually, England has a very important connection to the Celts as well. By the way, so does Spain, so does Portugal, so does France and several other countries. The Celts were all over Western Europe, actually.
Yeah, and the Celtic culture is quite strong in the north of Spain, particularly.
That's right, yeah. You've got even football teams, rather than Glasgow Celtic, you've got Celta de Vigo, that football team in Vigo in the north of Spain. And there's a few other Celtas, I can't remember what, but they're the big ones.
And Celtic music, very popular.
And that type of thing, yeah. Any Gallego, any person from Galicia, from Spain I've ever met, is always very proud of their Celtic connection.
A very famous Celt is Boadicea. She was obviously a woman and fought against the Romans. Boadicea. That was quite common in the days of the Celts because they often had female leaders. So another point there, Boadicea fighting against the Romans.
Yes, and she really did exist. Historians have discovered that she's definitely not a mythical character. For sure she existed. She's not an invention. And I'm not an expert, but I do know that the Celts had surprisingly egalitarian rules and regulations.
What does egalitarian mean?
Treating everyone as equal. Mm-hmm. And actually, women had a fairly good deal under the Celts compared to other tribes and other races of people at that time. The Celts were quite feminist, actually. They gave a lot of rights to women, and if husbands were bad to their wives, society punished them, and it wasn't permitted. They were quite good to women on the whole, considering they lived, you know, many, many, many hundreds of years ago.
Mm-hmm. So in 43 AD, that's 43 after Christ, the Romans occupied most of England and Wales. So a big Roman presence in England and Wales in those days. And they built a wall. And we've spoken about walls recently, if you're a regular listener to the podcast.
The Mexican wall.
Yeah. But they built a wall, the Romans built a wall along the Scottish border. It was called Hadrian's Wall after the Roman Emperor Hadrian. And this was built in order to keep the barbarians in the north, those Scottish barbarians that wanted to come over the border and rape and take away all the good things in the south of England. They built this wall to try to stop them. And then what happened, Reza?
So the Romans didn't think much of the Scots. They thought they were unmanageable. The Romans stayed in Britain for a long time. Obviously, they were in other places longer, like Spain and Portugal, but they were in Britain for a long time as well. You know, people forget Roman connections with Britain. But by the 5th century, that's AD, after the death of Christ, Anno Domini, by the 5th century, they were losing control. And other people, other tribes like the Angles and the Saxons, they attacked Britain to try and take over control for themselves. So there was no fixed English race, let's say, at that point of time. There were tribes, there were races, Angles, Saxons, and others like Jutes and all sorts.
So that was in the 5th century. Now, in the 9th century, the Vikings came. The Vikings came to Britain from Scandinavia. And what did the Vikings do? They attacked monasteries. They killed the monks. They killed the monks. And they stole gold and they stole silver. That's what the Vikings did. How long did they stay in Britain for, Reza?
Well, most people reckon about 300 years, so a long time. So obviously they left their mark, dejar su marca, yeah? It's affected British culture. But they were finally defeated by the Saxon king, Alfred, who we often call Alfred the Great. The Great because he was the first truly great Saxon king who managed to unify a lot of Saxons and perhaps Angles as well, and therefore we start to think of the term Anglo-Saxon, which is the unification of the Angles and the Saxons, and he was perhaps the first great king of the Anglo-Saxons.
And then there's a date that every schoolboy or schoolgirl remembers. Maybe it's the only historical date that I do remember, 1066. 1066, the Norman invaders from France came over and defeated King Harold, the Anglo-Saxon king.
Who defeated Harold?
The Norman invaders from France under William the Conqueror. So William the Conqueror came over and defeated the Anglo-Saxons. And then he took control of the kingdom. And in doing so, because of the French influence, we got many French words and customs into the British culture, thanks to William the Conqueror.
Yeah, this has happened all over the world. We think William the Conqueror, what a fundamental English king. Yeah, but he's actually French, as happens with so many kings and queens.
William the Conqueror.
Guillaume, he would have been Guillaume.
Guillaume and the Conqueror.
We can be absolutely sure that he didn't speak a word of English. He wouldn't have spoken a
absolutely
single
not,
word of English. Well, it would have been impossible because, in fact, English didn't exist at that time, so he couldn't have spoken it because the language still hadn't been invented. There were Angles speaking their language, Saxons, the Roman influence, And then the French, William the Conqueror, they mixed it all together and started to come up with what would become English. To come up with means to have a new idea. So it kind of starts with the French invasion.
Yeah, it evolved from there. And then during the Middle Ages, how do you say Middle Ages in Spanish?
La Edad Media, or Medieval.
Yeah, that's when England became one of the strongest nations in Europe during the Middle Ages.
So England and Scotland, they are part of the same kingdom at the moment, the United Kingdom, but of course they weren't always. King Edward I was the first English king who conquered Scotland. Craig mentioned William the Conqueror, to conquer is conquistar. So he conquered Scotland, and so the Scottish came under English influence.
And speaking of conquering, Edward III, two kings after Edward I, he conquered Wales and Ireland.
So as you probably know, then you can talk about the United Kingdom, but you can divide it into its different parts. We've spoken about this before.
Yeah.
But England, that has always been the dominant country because it's bigger and they have a bigger population. So anybody who's conquered anyone else has tended to be from England, going outwards, going north, west, or not east, because that would be into the sea, wouldn't it? North or west. So kind of the Anglo-Saxons going towards the Celtic areas, so to speak, to conquer them.
And 1509 was a pretty big year, wasn't it? What happened in 1509? Another famous king.
Well, King Henry VIII is well known by many people, above all for his marital affairs.
And his wives and his wives, big and fat that guy with a beard. Yeah,
you probably would recognize a picture of him if you saw him in a history book. But apart from having a very interesting love life, he brought in Protestant reform. And it was because of King Henry VIII that the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, lost its control over England. So he reformed the church and he earned a lot of money doing so. But the main motivation possibly for him doing it was simply to get divorced.
Because it wasn't possible to get divorced under the church.
Yeah, still isn't. That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still isn't in the Roman Catholic
Church. In the Roman Catholic religion, yeah.
Yeah, so Henry VIII, who was, to say the least, the Thier Poco, a ladies' man, to say the least, had got bored of his first wife.
What's a ladies' man?
Mujerago or mujer? Can you help me out, Spanish speakers? Mujerago or something like that?
That sounds like a bat.
That sounds like a bat.
He was a bat.
I can't quite remember. We'll have to look that up for the next episode. But in English, we can say he was a womanizer. So a womanizer, that's I-S-E-R at the end, is not a woman. It's a man who likes women a bit too much.
So he likes to swap partners and sleep with different women. A woman's man.
Yeah. So Henry VIII was very much a womanizer, and he wanted to get divorced, but he couldn't. It was a Catholic. So he just stopped being a Catholic. Protestantism had already been invented in other countries. So he thought, well, yeah, let's bring it over to England. Then I can get divorced. And that's exactly what he did.
It's a bit like, you don't like the rules, so you break the rules. Yeah. You don't like the law, so you make a new law, which is still happening today in politics. But so that was the beginning, really, of the Protestant church, wasn't it? He actually formed the Protestant church in England because he wanted to get divorced from Catherine of Aragon.
His Spanish wife, we're afraid to say.
Yeah.
He got bored of Catalina de Aragon. He wanted to get rid of her. And she was a very, very devout Catholic, extremely religious, and wouldn't hear of it. So he got rid of her.
Yeah.
Then Henry had a daughter, Craig, who was possibly the most successful monarch ever in British history, you might say. Who was that?
Yeah, Elizabeth I. She was the first Queen of England, Elizabeth I. And she was the queen who defeated the Spanish fleet, the Spanish ships, the Armada, and created the first English colonies in America. So because of the wars, England got control of different islands and they then became English colonies overseas.
For those of you listening in Central and South America, as well as others, you don't need us to tell you about the connection with that part of the world with Spain, because they were Spanish colonies. But it was because Elizabeth I beat the Spanish Armada, which tried to invade England, that the British were then able to become more and more powerful in the Americas. So to cut a long story short, the English could then steal what the Spanish had already stolen from South America. So they stole from the thieves, so to speak. Yeah. Robaron de los ladrones.
It was all a big power struggle, una lucha de poder, like it is today in politics. Huge powers, superpowers fighting against each other. But in 1642, there was an internal struggle in England. There was a civil war. Civil war began in England in 1642. And what did that involve? What did that mean, Reza?
Well, so there were basically two sides. There were people who liked the king, Charles I, so the royalists. Mm-hmm. And then there were the, I suppose you would call them republicans, but they didn't call them republicans at the time. They called them the parliamentarians. So the parliamentarians wanted parliament and only parliament to control things, whereas the royalists wanted the king to decide. And the parliamentarians under Oliver Cromwell, you've probably heard of him, most of you, Oliver Cromwell, won. He was their leader, and he won, and he proclaimed himself the Lord Protector, which basically gave him the same powers as the king had had before.
So what happened to the king that he defeated?
Well, to make sure he didn't trouble him anymore, he executed the king.
So he killed him, yeah?
He cut off his head.
Wow.
And he became Lord Protector. So effectively, there was no king. So people forget that the United Kingdom wasn't always a kingdom. It was briefly a republic for a short period of time, just like Spain has been a republic for a short period of time.
But let's jump forward now. Let's go forward more than 100 years, because in 1776, on July the 4th, 13 of those colonies that Britain had kind of captured, they declared independence from Britain. So I'm speaking about General George Washington. George Washington, who broke the British Army, defeated the British Army in 1783, and then the US, got its independence from Britain. So another very important date, 4th of July, Independence Day in the US, 1776.
It's hard to imagine now, isn't it? Because the British and the Americans, generally speaking, are considered to be such close allies. That's A-L-L-I-E-S, aliados. But they had a war back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were killing each other. The USA, as it is today, North America then, was a British colony. Hard to think. If anything, you could imagine the reverse, but you can't imagine the British controlling North America, but indeed they did.
They wanted their freedom. What's the next thing on our list of fun facts about history?
Well, we've already mentioned a Frenchman. The French are often pop up. Pop up means make an appearance.
Surgir.
They often pop up in British history. Not surprising, since they're next door. Son los vecinos, they're the neighbours, eh? You can take a short boat ride across the sea to get to France. So our next French character is none other than Napoleon Bonaparte, who, as you may well know, became the Emperor of France in 1805. You notice how we say dates, by the way. If there's a zero after the first two digits, we say 1805, in 1805. And he very quickly declared war on Britain. But he didn't get his way, did he, Craig?
No, because there was a huge battle again in 1815 between the British and the French. Guess who won? The British. The British beat the French at the Battle of Waterloo. If you've heard ABBA's song, you'll know what I'm talking about. The Battle of Waterloo, 1815, between the British and the French. And after various battles against them, including Badajoz or Badajoz and Salamanca, Spain. British forces led by the Duke of Wellington finally beat the French.
So that makes up for the fight we had with the Armada. In that particular war, we were on the Spanish side. We were helping the Spanish get rid of the French. So, you know, things haven't always been bad between Spain and Britain. So that's the French fighting with the English, help with the Spanish. All countries have fought with other countries. Nobody's perfect. And as we've mentioned before, Britain and Ireland have always had a strange relationship. If you want to listen to episode 52 of Aprender Inglés con Rosy Craig, in that episode, we explained in detail about exactly politically what is the United Kingdom. Because all of Ireland, which is not the United Kingdom these days, it used to be part of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland until 1922. So in theory, Ireland was a sovereign part of the United Kingdom. But then they decided to break away and form a republic in 1922. In the south, but Northern Ireland remained in the United Kingdom. So this explains the historical love-hate relationship there's always been between Great Britain and Ireland. Their histories are very closely connected. You can't disconnect the histories. You can't have one without the other.
So if you want to dig into that a little bit, to dig into something is cavar, to really go deep and find out more information. If you want to dig into that, go back and listen to episode 52, which you can find at inglespodcast.com/52. Before we wrap up and finish the podcast this week, we'd like to mention our sponsors, iTalki. What is iTalki? iTalki is a website where you can find a private teacher. You can find a teacher there to teach you English using Skype over the internet at a time that's convenient to you and a price you can afford, because there's a wide variety. There's a huge selection of different teachers there. And Reza and I have both tried the service. We like it. We've used it and we're recommending it to you. If you'd like more information about how to find a private teacher online, go to inglespodcast.com/italki. And if you register through that link, enlace, through the webpage, Italki are offering 100 free credits, which is more or less a free lesson to people who sign up through this podcast. And we'd both like to say thank you, Italki, for sponsoring us on Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
Well, just before we leave you, what about for fun if we have a little quiz? We've mentioned most of the important key facts about British history, but we have deliberately, that means on purpose, not mentioned a few things in this podcast because we want you to do a little bit of research, investigar, do a bit of research and find out for yourself. So we're going to ask you 6 questions, and the first listener who correctly answers all these 6 questions will get a special mention on the next show. What about that?
Sounds good. So we've got a short quiz for you on history, and we're going to read the questions for you now. So if you know the answers, you can shout at your car's dashboard, or you can shout at your computer or your phone, however you're listening. And the questions will also be in the show notes to this episode on our webpage at inglespodcast.com/153. You can read the questions there. So, number one, name the UK's first ever female prime minister. Who was the UK's first lady prime minister? That's number one. That's number two, Reza.
So, the second question is, which British monarch, that's a king or queen, ruled the longest period of time? Who has been on the throne, a word that Craig used earlier?
El trono.
The longest.
Number three, which British king was given the nickname? Nickname is Apodo, isn't it?
Apodo.
Apodo. Yeah. Nickname is Apodo. Which British king was given the nickname of the Mad King? El Loco. Which British king is known as the Mad King? That's question number three.
The fourth question relates to something we mentioned earlier, but we didn't say these words. Who were the Roundheads and Cavaliers? The Roundheads and Cavaliers. Can you tell us who they were?
Question number five. When was the Battle of Hastings? In which year? When was the Battle of Hastings?
And the last question, number six, is which famous British sailor defeated the Spanish Armada? Sorry about that, amigos. I'll repeat that. Which famous British sailor, well, famous for us, maybe not for you, which famous British sailor defeated the so-called unbeatable Spanish Armada?
Those are the six questions. You can send your answers by voice message at speakpipe.com/Ingles podcast. And of course, you can send us an email with your answers to me, Craig, at inglespodcast.com.
Or to me, Reza, that's at belfastreza@gmail.com.
And before we go, we'd like to thank our wonderful sponsors this week, who are Carlos Garrido Zarahiz Picazo, Mamin Juan Leiva Galera, Sara Janabo, Corey Finneran, Jorge Jimenez, Raul Lopez, Rafael Manuel Tarazona, Mariel Reidemann, Maite Palacín Pérez, Pedro Martínez, Ana Cherta, Maria Gervati, and we have a new sponsor. Many thanks to Nikolay Dimitrov. I hope I've pronounced your name correctly. A wonderful, wonderfully generous new sponsor. If you'd like to join our Patreon program to help us collect money for transcriptions, we are aiming at $100 per month. We're a third of the way there now, so we only have two-thirds to go. And thank you for Nikolay for helping us to get there. In the meantime, we have the wonderful Arminda from Madrid, who is transcribing episodes very, very well and very, very accurately in her free time. And we currently have full transcriptions for episodes 131, 134, 135, 136, 138, 139, and 140. Many thanks to Arminda for continuing to help us with the transcriptions for those episodes. Reza, what are we talking about next week?
If you listen to next week's episode, you'll hear about whose, that's right, two whose, and who.
Why did you repeat whose?
All will be revealed next week.
Ah, a teaser. So if you don't listen, you won't know. Hope to see you next week. Thanks so much for listening. And until next week, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.